This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Arman Shrocki. Each week, Arman will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution for SaaS companies on AWS. The tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm pleased to have Sahil here with me. And could you please tell us a little bit about yourself, Sahil, and then also about your company?
Yeah, Arvind, first of all, thank you for having me. Really glad to be here. I'm the CEO of Spiralize. We're a conversion rate optimization company, which is a fancy word for we do A/B testing on websites. And what we do is there are 34,000 websites that A/B test somewhere on their website, sometimes on their homepage, sometimes on their pricing page. And we scrape all of those websites to find the best A/B tests. And we then run those for our clients. The benefit they get is a 30% conversion lift in the first 90 days. I'll talk a minute what 30% means, but it's a big number. Imagine telling a chief marketing officer, we're going to make your sales pipeline 30% bigger. It's pretty exciting. And we guarantee our fees. So we make it really easy to try it out. It's a really cool business. I've been doing it for 2 years as the CEO. Before Spiralize, I was the CEO and founder of a healthcare SaaS business. I ran it for 11 years, sold it in 2021. Along the way, I was actually a customer of Spiralize. I used the product myself. That's how I discovered it, opened my eyes to its power. And when I was thinking about my next move, I knew the founder, he and I are both in Atlanta. He was looking for a partner to take it to the help him bring it to the next level. That's what I'm doing.
Fantastic story. Now, in your case, you have been, done it a couple of times. You have been in up and downs. So we have some questions on that part. But let me start with the main question that, when there is a website for any company, this is probably one of the most important digital assets they have, right? So the website of the company, that's where, it used to be your building. That, everyone knows that's the building in that particular street in that city. But now to me, it's actually website, way more important than your building. Doesn't matter how greatly situated the building, it's still your website is where most people in the world can get there with a few clicks. Now, how do you think, most companies do with their website based on your experience? Are they able to turn it to a lead gen machine? Do you think most of them are really great at it after 20 years being in internet or 25 years having a website, or still we are at the kind of not so great situation?
It's a great question. How are people doing? Well, let's cut the world in half, or at least let's segment who we're talking. Today, Arman, you and I are going to talk about B2B SaaS companies. So let's put, Amazon, all these online marketplaces, by the way, incredible. And they've done a ton of conversion rate optimization. So the marketplaces, eBay over there. Let's also put kind of anyone who's selling a physical product, like Zappos. Let's put them aside for the moment also. Okay, it's a very different world. Let's focus on you're selling enterprise software, maybe you're a company like CrowdStrike. You're selling security software, or your Bamboo HR, you're selling HR software for onboarding employees. Okay, these are big, complicated pieces of software. No one pulls out a credit card and goes, I'm going to put this $1 million purchase on my on my company credit card. To answer your question, where's B2B SaaS? I think we're at the dawn of a new age. The first 20, 25 years of the internet, it's really just about what you said. We went from our buildings being our symbol, our the way we that's our physical manifestation of the business. And now our website, our digital presence is what counts. And yeah, it took us about 25 years to get there. Now, B2B SaaS, really in the last 5 to 8 years, they've discovered what something the e-commerce, the Amazons, the eBays, Booking.com of the world discovered probably about 10 or 15 years ago is you got a website, you got people coming there. Now, how do you turn them into customers? And that's just starting. We've just barely scratched the surface. Like anything, there's some early adopters that are doing it really well. We can learn a lot from them. But the majority of the world, I'd say 80%, are just starting that journey.
Interesting.
You know, a good analogy would be search engine optimization, SEO. Use a little bit of marketing jargon here.
Yeah.
How many websites do you think today, Armin, do SEO of some kind? If you had to make a guess.
Well, I have done it for so long, so I will be kind of probably giving you the wrong answer
No, I
because I
think you
think
have a
any
good answer.
website should do it.
Yeah,
I
you're
mean,
exactly right. Yeah. What would you say? 80, 90% of,
yeah.
if you're a serious business, let's not put aside mom and pop, but
Sure.
serious B2B business, everyone does it. Some well, some okay, but everyone does it. But 20 years ago, it was a new idea. In fact, you kind of had to sell and educate people on how to do it. I think about what it must have been like when you first started doing SEO.
2004, yeah.
Okay, yeah. That was kind of the dawn of SEO. That's where conversion rate optimization is today. Think about where SEO was about 20 years ago. That's where CRO is today.
And when you say CRO, can you
What does that
offer
mean?
your definition of CRO?
Definition. So CRO, thank you, because it's easy for me to use acronyms and jargon because I live in this stuff every day. CRO stands for conversion rate optimization. And simply put, it's how do you take the traffic you're already getting and turn more of it into a customer? So if you have 100 people come to your homepage every day and 10 of them click that start your free trial, very common for a product-led growth type of company. We see it all the time in B2B SaaS. If 10 out of 100 will click that button and fill it in, can we get 20 out of 100? Can we get 30? Because if you do, it's insanely profitable for your business. They're already coming to your website, right? Maybe they're organically finding you via a search. Maybe they clicked on an ad in Facebook or LinkedIn. Somehow they found you. And if they leave, that's a shame.
Now let's say, for example, B2B companies, they have a website and they wanted to convert those visitors coming to their websites one way or the other to the next step, whatever it is, right? So each company might have different idea. One of them may want it for you to fill out a form. One of them wants to you for you to see maybe the next video or get educated on the offer or take a call or whatever. So in that case, there are many dimensions. One dimension is just the type of action you take. You can change the type of action and the conversion rate may change. You can change the style of the page. You can change the wording of the page. You can put more images. You can put less images. You know, there are so many dimensions. What are the dimensions that you guys focus on? And what are the dimensions that you may say, well, those dimensions, we leave it to the company to decide. We are not getting engaged in those dimensions.
I'll tell you the first, let's talk about the thing we don't do. Maybe it sounds a little counterintuitive. Let's start with the things we don't do, which is what most people think is especially I think in marketing, is, you know, the problem is we have a long, ugly form. Let's get rid of all those fields. Now you do that and the sales team is in revolt because they're like, oh, now we're getting garbage form fills and we don't know which salesperson to route it to. We can't qualify the lead. We don't know, is this coming from an enterprise client? Is this coming from a mid-market or SMB? Okay. And marketing goes, look what we did. We got all these form fills. We got more leads, but they're bad leads and they're hard to qualify. So those are the things we don't do. You know, I'd call those are kind of cheap tricks. Look, if you have 8 fields on a form and you just get rid of 6 of them, sure, you're going to get more people filling it in. Mm-hmm. But are those the right people? Probably not. You probably can't tell. So that's what we don't do. What we do are all the other things you mentioned. I'll kind of broadly define it as the digital journey, which I know is a cliche, but it's, what is the offer? Like, if you buy this product, is it going to save you money? Is it, if you're selling HR software, is it going to let you do payroll more efficiently? Can you onboard your new employees more effectively? What does it look like? What are you getting? Some app? Is it a web app, mobile app? Is it nice to, is it easy to use? Who else uses it? We call that social proof. If you're selling, let's say your Workday, which is a big kind of enterprise type software. Well, who uses Workday? Big companies like Walmart, Procter & Gamble, Constellation Software. Well, when someone comes to that website, they want to see, hey, this product solves problems for people like me with problems like mine. So these are 3 really good examples. The layout of the page, the value prop, some people call those USPs, unique selling propositions, using a little bit of jargon there, and social proof. Who is this for? Is this for Sahil's laundromat? Or is this for Walmart, big enterprise? So changing all of those things is what we do. Let me stop there. I'll talk about how we do it. But I think I love what you just did there, which is ask me to talk about, like, what is it we're trying to do?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's great. I wonder if, for example, when you look at, you know, these landing pages, as you mentioned, in your mind, there are some very obvious common mistakes that you see everyone is making. And to you might be very obvious, but to most websites, they may not even notice.
Yeah.
And you say, well, these are a few mistakes that really we see very commonly people make and they shouldn't. Is there anything like that that you can offer as an example to us?
Absolutely. I'll give you 3 common mistakes that everyone listening to this can immediately go check your own website and fix them really easily. Okay. The first one, and let me give you the order and then I'll go back and do them. The first one is relying on the words to tell your story. 2, not showing your product. 3, when you do use words, not making them easy to skim. Okay, so let's go back through all of those. So the first is relying too much on your words. Now here's an easy test everyone can do right now. Open up your browser on your computer. Go to your company's homepage, right click. If you're in the Chrome browser, there's a thing called Google Translate. Choose a language that no one on your team speaks. Okay. Farsi, Arabic, Hindi. Okay. I'm choosing languages that my family speaks, okay? But the average office worker in America doesn't, okay? Put your homepage into one of those languages, okay? Go show 5 friends the homepage and ask them, what does this company do? If they can't tell you, you have a problem. Now, I don't mean don't, you know, you're not asking them to explain exactly what niche software this stuff. Just even say, what kind of company is this? What category? Is this a software business? Is this, you know, is this a hardware company? What is it? And the beauty of it is that it shows you how much of the heavy lifting, I'll use some marketing jargon, the copywriting is doing. if you can't look at instantaneously, if your brain can't look at a, by the way, your brain is making this decision in seconds when it comes to a homepage. Okay. Mm. So the processing time is sapping your audience's attention. So that's the first test, but it's also a lot of fun. Anyone can do it. All you need is a browser. The second thing is not showing your product. I'm draw a line. We're talking about B2B SaaS here. Okay. I'm putting aside all this other stuff that's not B2B SaaS. Amazing. How many B2B SaaS websites show stock images, lifestyle images, three people in a conference room looking happy? Like, who's that happy in a conference room? Not me. What are they selling? Yellow sweaters. Here's a great question. Think about the last automobile ad you saw. Let me ask you, Armand, can you think of it? I don't know. What's the last time you saw an automobile ad?
Probably the ones that I already have and like, or something okay. like that. Well, if I like electric cars, then I pay attention.
Yeah, what's the last time you saw, what car company was it? What was the ad?
It was BMW and talking about electric cars.
Okay, awesome. Now, I want you to picture that ad in your mind. Can you picture it? Mm-hmm. Whatever was happening in the ad. What was this? Now, was this a Super Bowl ad with Christopher Walken, or was it a different ad?
No, it was on a website, but it was okay. a video.
Great. Now, imagine that ad without the car in it. Mm-hmm. It would be weird. Would you show, yeah. would BMW show an ad without showing the BMW car? No. Now, look, they put other stuff, like there's funny, interesting, exciting stuff. But the prototypical car ad shows someone driving. Now they're driving it in a way that you and I don't drive our car, right? They're in a, they're on a winding road and they're driving 90 miles an hour, but they're showing the product. In B2B SaaS, I don't know why everyone is obsessed with showing boring pictures of someone sitting in a conference room having fun. Like, just sure. show your product. Show a nice screenshot. And by the way, you don't have to go very far. Go to your sales team. By the way, don't go to your head of sales. Go to your SDR or your AE and say, when you do a demo, where is the wow moment in the demo? Mm-hmm. What is the screen you show where your audience, like their eyes light up and go, ooh, that looks cool. Every AE knows that. Every SDR knows that moment. Take that screenshot. That's what you should put on your homepage. Okay, so that's show your image. The third thing is, skimmability. Now, if you're writing a landing page, I think all of us in this world, you have a committee, you got your designer, you've got your copywriter, you got someone from product, you got someone from branding, and you spend hours, day, maybe you have an agency helping you out, and you spend hours and hours poring over every detail till it's pixel perfect. You argue about every word. And you go all the way down the page, the hero section, below the fold, second div, third div, all the way to the footer. It's got to be just right. You're investing all this money to send traffic to this landing page. But your audience, they don't care. Here's what I imagine the average person is doing when they look at a landing page. They're on their phone. They've got their kid crying in the background. They're talking to their spouse about the grocery list. They've got dinner baking on the stovetop. They're distracted. Their attention span is short. And they're going to quickly skim your landing page. So the web, particularly mobile web, but all web, rewards skimmability. Bullet points, bold words, visual cues. Attention directors. Another way of saying that is get to the point. So those are three things. Recap. Don't let the words do too much of the work. Two, show the product. Three, when you use words, make them skimmable.
Very good. points that you mentioned, simple to understand, yet very interesting points. And as I said to you, it may make sense and to be very simple, and nobody should really make those mistakes because they are so obvious. But believe it or not, the obvious things are the ones that we sometimes miss.
That's right.
More often. So, but that's great. So thank you very much for those points. You have been, in different positions. You have been in starting companies, leading companies, and in many of these cases, you have seen up and downs. In reality, there are ups, there are downs. You have seen that sometimes, founders are there and they are investing heavily in building something from nothing. And it's a lot of pressure. And if it doesn't go up all the time, then that means sometimes it's going down. And if it goes down more often than it goes up, then what does it do as far as the pressure goes, as far as the other things? So we are switching gears here a little bit, talking about that aspect of your experience and, what you have seen. And we had a quick chat about it before, and I just wanted to see, if you could please share some of your thoughts with the audience here.
Well, thanks for asking. And Armin, I think this is a really important topic because first, as you described, every business has ups and downs. And everyone likes to talk about the ups. But the fact is, if you're a founder, you're a CEO, you're a chief marketing officer, you're in charge of something, a lot more of life is spent in the, I want to say all the way at the bottom of the valley, but sometimes you're headed in, sometimes you're climbing out. Sometimes you don't know which one you're in. It's where a lot of, in if you're in, especially in that smaller company, that's where it is. Here's my perspective. First, just to acknowledge, a lot of the times is spent in the valley. Either you're there and you didn't realize you were there, or you're trying to dig yourself out. You look around and that's not what people like to blog about. Certainly not what the coverage is about. No one says, hey, we got a great podcast with this loser, Sahil Patel. He burnt through a shit ton of capital and his business tanked. Welcome, Sahil Patel. No, everyone's talked about, and I'll take me as a opinion. If you tell my story one way, you could say Sahil Patel, he went to Harvard Business School. He founded a business at 32. He sold it to a publicly traded company at 40. Wow. Sounds good. And at one level, it's true. But it leaves out, I think, the true story, which is I made every error known to people. Plus, I invented some own errors, mistakes I didn't even know were mistakes. The company went sideways a bunch of times. I basically had to get a huge separation from my investors and to buy the business back from them. Multiple times I thought I was going to lose the business, almost ran out of cash multiple times. And when we finally got to an exit, it was a good outcome, but it wasn't a home run. And most of the money, just so everyone knows, most of the money went to the investors, as it should, by the way. The investors who put the first money in, they deserve to get most of the money out. And here I am. I'm still working for a living. I'm not sitting on the beach in the Caribbean. Now, I have a great life, and I'm lucky that I got to do the CEO thing again. I think we should all just let's not cover up what really happened. Don't tell just the good stuff. Tell the real stuff. There's much more to be learned from the real stuff and living in the valley. That's the first thing. I think the second thing is, and I know this is a cliche, running a business feels like a lonely job, but no one should feel sorry for a CEO. Most of them are very well compensated and have most of the important things in life taken care of, but it's still a tough job. I think if I had to go back and tell, 30-year-old Sahil, I'm 46 now, 30-year-old Sahil some things. First, I would say, get a peer support group. Now, there's some very formal ones, EO, YPO, really nice. Not the right fit for everyone. I'm not telling everyone that's what you should do, but some of those are really good. There's also some informal ones that are more like people getting together for a beer or a coffee once a month. And there's everything in between. Some of them are very expensive. Some of them are probably free. It's just but find it. Like you need that because you're not alone. Number one. Number two, have a confidant who has no vested interest in the outcome. You need someone that you can vent to. That should never be your employees. It should never be your board. And most of the time, it shouldn't even be if you have a co-founder. Okay. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, all those people, they have a vested interest in the outcome and your paycheck. Now, the fourth thing is don't make it your spouse. Like it's perfectly good to vent to your spouse when you come home, but you should limit that. Mm-hmm. So have someone, a friend. It would be great if that person is someone that's maybe worked in a job like yours, but it doesn't matter. I think you just need someone that you can unload and just release that stuff. The third thing is, I highly recommend a licensed therapist. And the best advice is, get the help before you need it. Because when you're in crisis with a capital C, by the way, that's going to happen. It's coming for you. You may not know it, but it's coming for you. Your body is in fight or flight mode. And you're just going to do everything you can just to get from where you are to the next day. It's really hard to do anything else when you're in that mode, crisis with a capital C. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're not, I think running a business feels like you're just going from lowercase C crisis from one to another to another. That's just normal life, by the way. That's a great time. Take the time to work on yourself. The best analogy I can give is think of like a pro athlete. Armin, what's your favorite sport? What do you follow?
Probably a skiing.
Skiing.
Walking.
Okay.
Hiking, those hiking. Kind of things, yeah.
I'll admit, I don't know the skiing world that much, but I think that the analogy is still true. If you think about a professional high performance skier, okay, the competition is only one part of what they do. Think of everything they do away from the competition, the training, and think about the off season, whatever their off season is. Right? They're working on their diet, their technique, they're getting rest. The same is true as a CEO and founder. Whatever your off season is, got to work on yourself. That's how you make yourself better. When you come to work every day, that's like game day. You got to perform. But the way you get better is you work on yourself. And you got to do it before you need it, right? Just like an athlete, at the beginning of the season, that's not when they start working on themselves. All the improvement happens in the off season.
Yeah, great points. Absolutely true. And that's what makes it very important for building such a community that, especially when you speak with like-minded people, as you said, a group of people that you can find and meet with them and, share thoughts. And at some degree, even this podcast, when I started, the idea was to really build such a community that, we bring SaaS experts, SaaS leaders to these kind of discussions. And those are very important. I mean, many of these points that you mentioned, are the points that it's good for others to hear to, hopefully some of them even may, find you easily with a click or two on LinkedIn and connect and ask for more information and just connect people to each other and different, topics can be expanded. So that's great. No, I appreciate all of the points that you just mentioned. I'm going to ask you also if you could, please share with us a book that you like or some books that you like personally, professionally, if you have any, podcast or any blog that you read, that's fine as well. If you wanted to share any particular activity or event that has helped you, those kind of things that you can share with the community of SaaS leaders that you think it will be helpful to you, we appreciate it.
Well, that's very kind of you to ask. I'll share three things. First, my favorite book is Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson. If you go back and read it, you're going to see and hear a bunch of things that feel very familiar to us here in 2024. Flip to the front of the book and look at where when that book was published. 1992. Wow. He was talking about not just about the internet, but about artificial intelligence, virtual reality, augmented reality, digital presence. Now, I don't know about you, but in 1992, I hadn't heard of those things and I wasn't thinking about them. So
incredible. Yeah.
Even if you're not a sci-fi person, sci-fi people out listening who are into sci-fi will know Neal Stephenson, will know Snow Crash, it was a seminal book. But if you're not, and it's an easy read. It's you know, a couple hundred pages, fun light read. That's my favorite book. Number two, if you ask me kind of things I like or things I like to do, you know, I'll build on the topic we were just talking about, which is, you know, how do you work on yourself? I think everyone should have a hobby. For me, my hobby is playing guitar, strictly amateur, but I really enjoy it. I play, this is like the nerdiest thing ever. I play in a Rush cover band. And all we do is play prog rock songs from the 70s from a band called Rush. And it's purely for fun. You know, the audience is so small, but we enjoy it. And I think everyone should have, you need some kind of outlet for things like that. The third thing I'll leave you with for the folks out there that are interested in what we talked about in terms of how do you improve your website, how do you make your website into a digital lead gen machine? I post on LinkedIn every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday at 7:30 a.m. Eastern. Come check out, see what I'm talking about. Post a comment, what you like, what you didn't like. I think you'll like it.
Fantastic. All great. Thanks again for being with us, Sahil.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
With you. It was fun. Thank you very much. Take care.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Arman Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution for SaaS companies on AWS. The tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.